Our text for focus this morning is going to be in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 11. And in a few moments, I'm going to read several verses from the end of the Gospel of Luke, starting at verse number 33. That's the Gospel of Luke, chapter 11, starting at verse number 33. The basic premise I've been working with over the past several weeks is this, that meals, food, they tell stories. That's where we are working from during this series, during the season of Lent leading up to Easter. In the Gospel of Luke, eating with others is a prominent and featured setting for some of Jesus' most important and heart-touching teachings and encounters. Each week, we are looking at different meals in the Gospel of Luke. Different stories and circumstances, but the main character in each episode is Jesus. And in each narrative, there is a deep and profound truth emanating from the meal table. We've been invited to dine with Jesus. That's the metaphor and picture I'd all like for us to gather around, to dine with Jesus and these texts during this season. We all have a seat at the table. Jesus is not only engaging with the characters in the various texts in the Gospel of Luke, he's also eating with us, interacting with us. So let us dine with Jesus and grow closer to him. There is a good reason to believe that we can have some good conversation and have and enjoy the delicacies of truth, challenge, and heart-penetrating invitations to be his disciple. So let's dine today. On the menu this morning, we are taking a look at the inside of ourselves. Some might call that introspection, dining and introspection. So I'm going to read from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 11, starting at verse number 33. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it in a cellar, but on the lampstand so that those who enter may see the light. Your eye is the lamp of your body. If your eye is healthy, your whole body is full of light. But if it is not healthy, your body is full of darkness. Therefore, consider whether the light in you is not darkness. If then your whole body is full of light, with no part of it in darkness, it will be full of light, as when a lamp gives you light with its rays. While Jesus was speaking, a Pharisee invited him to dine with him. So he went in and took his place at the table. The Pharisee was amazed to see that Jesus did not first wash before dinner. Then the Lord said to him, "Now, you Pharisees, clean out the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside you are full of greed and wickedness. You fools! Did not the one who made the outside make the inside also? So give for alms those things that are within, and see, everything will be clean for you. But woe to you, Pharisees, for you tithe mint and rue and herbs of all kinds and neglect justice and the love of God. It is these you ought to have practiced without neglecting the others. Woe to you, Pharisees, for you love to have the seat of honor in the synagogues and to be greeted with respect in the marketplace. Woe to you, for you are like unmarked graves, and people walk over them without realizing it." One of the lawyers answered him, "Teacher, when you say these things, you insult us too." And he said, "Woe also to you, lawyers, for you load people with burdens hard to bear, and you yourselves do not lift a finger to ease them. Woe to you, for you build the tombs of the prophets whom your ancestors killed, so you are witnesses and approve of the deeds of your ancestors, for they killed them, and you build their tombs. Therefore, also the wisdom of God said, I will send them prophets and apostles, some of whom they will kill and persecute, so that this generation may be charged with the blood of all the prophets shed since the foundation of the world, from the blood of Abel to the blood of Zechariah, who perished between the altar and the sanctuary. Yes, I tell you, it will be charged against this generation. Woe to you, lawyer, for you have taken away the key of knowledge. You did not enter yourselves, and you hindered those who were entering. When he went outside, the scribes and the Pharisees began to be very hostile toward him and to cross-examine him about many, many things. They were lying in wait for him to catch him in something he might say. If you're following the series, you will note that this is the second time that Jesus has been invited to eat with the Pharisees. He's been invited to eat several places. That is a storyline that we see throughout the Gospel of Luke. Many people ask Jesus to come have a meal with him. And we've shared that eating meals in this culture is no small deal. It's a big thing to be asked to go and eat dinner, eat lunch, eat a meal with other people, because you only eat with people that you are equals with, socially, economically, spiritually, culturally. And so to be invited is to say to someone, you're my equal, and let's dine together. The Pharisees were constantly inviting him to Jesus. This is the second instance in the Gospel of Luke. We're going to look at another instance next week. Should be noted again that there were various sects of Jews that were created in response to their predicament. They were subjects. They were oppressed by the Roman Empire. They sought out God for relief. They sought out God for rescue, akin to calling out and crying out to God to rescue them when they were oppressed in Egypt. They're crying out to God to free us and liberate us from this Roman oppression. And what happened is there were born four major sects of people to deal with the Roman oppression. You had the Sadducees, which was a religious sect that they believed in the establishment, the Roman establishment. They made peace with Rome and focused on religious ritual. They believed in divine punishment, and they believed that reward would happen in this life. As such, they did not believe in the resurrection. They felt quite all right to cozy up with the Roman government and Roman officials and even do away with some religious beliefs that might put that relationship in jeopardy. So you had the Sadducees. You also had the Zealots. The Zealots believed in the overthrow of the Roman Empire. They would not tolerate pagan idols and practices in their land. And they believed that God would bring about the restoration of the kingdom with their help, even their violent help. The Zealots were warriors. They were ready to kill, behead, and do whatever they could do to Roman soldiers to seize back the power that they believe belonged to them, the Zealots. There are also the Essenes. The Essenes believed in withdrawing from the corrupt temple system and the corrupt empire. They would live holy lives in an alternative world until God brought about the kingdom without their help. They were exclusivists, and they believed in kind of being separated from the rest of folks because they would be tainted by their interaction with others. So they kind of withdrew and lived in caves and in deserts. And then you had the Pharisees, who believed in radical personal holiness. They believed in internalizing their religious law and that God would give punishment and reward in the afterlife. The Pharisees believed in resurrection. The Pharisees and Essenes become the focus because obviously today's text takes place at the home of a Pharisee. But it has been surmised that Jesus and his relatives and the people with whom he associated with were part of the Essene group. The biggest evidence for that is a guy by the name of John the Baptist. John the Baptist, the one who came preaching in the wilderness. Remember how weird John was, the way he dressed, and he preached this radical message of radical holiness and separation, and he was willing to call out the government. That's what actually got him killed, because he made comment about one of the kings, one of the Jewish kings. He was murdered, beheaded for that. So believe that he was part of the Essenes and that Jesus was part of this Essene community. Now, the Essenes and the Pharisees actually had a lot in common. And that's why it should be no surprise that the Pharisees were constantly inviting Jesus to eat with them. And while there were some differences, you should note that the Pharisees and Essenes, the Pharisees and Jesus, in the Pharisees' mind, they weren't always looking for a way to point out the differences. They were actually trying to find some common ground. Maybe Jesus is one of us and can advance our message. They both believed in the law of God, and they both believed in a call that was the calling of people back to God. But don't let these similarities pull us into a false sense of comfort, because this text will highlight where Jesus and the Pharisees were out of sync. And so Jesus' invite to dinner came while he was teaching and preaching, while he was speaking, the text says. The text says that he was given an invitation to come dine with the Pharisee. The word here for dine is a word that indicates a lighter meal, not a full meal like a full dinner or banquet. So think of Jesus being asked to eat lunch or midday snack. And don't let the simplicity of this meal, or this lunch, or this snack diminish the power of eating with others. Further, don't think that because this meal might not be a five-course full meal, that Jesus won't use this opportunity to offer a powerful reflection. So, here's the story retold. One day Jesus was preaching and he was sharing some powerful reflections about the inner life. He was speaking about the light on the inside and how if it was dark on the inside, you won't be able to shine light on the outside. Jesus has great concern about the inner life. An onlooking Pharisee invites Jesus to come and eat with him. Like before, Pharisees don't shy away from inviting this popular rabbi who has gained a huge following to come eat with them. I think partly because it's just a courteous thing to do, to invite someone to come eat at your house. But also, you know, there could be some ulterior motives. You invite a popular person to your house to eat, word gets around, and that might raise your clout. Now, proper Jewish eating etiquette suggests that you wash before a meal. Now, being an Essene, the washing dictated more than just a bar of soap or some hand sanitizer. That's kind of what we do today. It is believed, and this is reported by some historians, one by the name of Josephus, who reported that Essenes, before meals, would actually take a full bath. Not just wash your hands and go eat, but go take a full bath. And so the Pharisees are wondering why this dude has come in here and he did not wash. And in our minds, we say to ourselves, you know, don't you wash your hands before you eat? Like, that's just nasty if you don't. But the question here is much more than scrubbing hands. In fact, the word there where it says they wondered why Jesus did not wash, the Greek word there is a word that many of you will be familiar with, because it's not a Greek word that means wash. It's a word that we use quite frequently here in this setting. It's the word baptizo. which is where we get our English word baptism. And so the Pharisees were wondering why Jesus didn't do as the Essenes do, which is take a full bath, this ritual cleansing, baptizo. We baptize in our Christian tradition, but it is certainly born out of the Jewish tradition of ritual cleansing. And they're wondering why this dude did not do a full ritual wash before he eats his meals. And the reason they're so concerned about this, as I've been saying through this series, is that Pharisees, they take the eating laws and purification laws, they take that very seriously. And if you don't do your ritual cleanse, that says something about you, because in the Pharisees' minds, appearances mean something. The way it looks means a lot. And if Jesus was not going to cleanse himself, this popular rabbi whom I've invited into my home, if he is not going to participate in this ritual, physical, this thing that we see, this outward cleansing, that's not going to be a good look. Maybe here I should pause and talk about etiquette. Many of you have served dinner and gone to other people's houses for dinner, and there's a proper etiquette that you employ at your house. Some of us are pretty laid back in our homes, and that's fine, but even still, there's some etiquette involved. You need to know things when you are invited into someone's home to eat. And proper assumed etiquette are things like, you know, you don't start eating until the host says, hey, it's time to eat. You wash your hands. And again, you wait for the host's instructions about the meal. You know, we used to have a lot of people over at the house for small groups and such. And we had one individual who used to come. Some of you are laughing because you know exactly where I'm going with this. But we had one individual. We'd set up the food, and usually I'd spend a lot of time cooking food and doing my display. And I'm gonna just let y'all know, folks, when I cook food, I overdo it. You know, I'm a wannabe chef. You know, I'll cut up parsley for no reason just so I can just, you know, throw some parsley on it. So I'm throwing my finishing touches on the food and everything. And this guest comes over, and he, as I'm preparing and I'm throwing my finishing touches before I say, hey, everybody, we can eat. You know, before I can do that, he comes up to the station where our utensil drawer is, and he comes up and says, hey, Dion. And he just reaches in my drawer, utensil drawer. He grabs a fork, and he just starts sampling the food. Some of you are appalled right now, like, and I'm watching in horror, like, did this mug just taste my food? And not only that, he then tasted the food and then, like, did that with the fork and put the fork back in my drawer. I'm not making this up. Other people saw it, and I then threw all of my utensils away. But anyway, there's proper etiquette involved. Like, could you just wait for me to say, hey, you can eat and you can have all that you want? So there's proper etiquette involved in terms of just waiting for the host. Also, there are some unwritten rules at the dinner table. Things like, you know what? There's some things we're just not going to talk about at the dinner table. We don't talk politics, and in many situations, we don't talk religion. I grew up in a family that had many family gatherings. I also grew up in a family that had a wide array of religious beliefs. And every time we gathered together for a big cookout and meal, it started out great. We ate the ribs and the chicken and the greens and the sweet potato pies. And as it began to wind down, somebody would bring up Jesus or God, and that set it off. So it got to a point where when we had family gatherings, we had to make rules. Hey, we're not going to talk about God today. I know that sounds like irreligious, but it was healthy for our family. These unwritten rules that when you're invited to someone's home, you just don't do that. You don't talk about things that might offend the host. Let's get back to the story. But Jesus engaging a host who's wondering how come this guy did not bathe himself, wash himself, ritually purify himself before he eats. And here, etiquette was less the concern for Jesus at this moment than to offer a diatribe based on the very thing that Jesus was preaching about earlier. Remember, he preached about fixing the inside before you could have impact on the outside. The question about washing and dipping and cleansing opened the can that I'm sure the host did not see coming. Church, there is no kind or soft way to put this. Jesus went off. Jesus went off. I remember eating with a relative and deciding to share my thoughts on a political issue. We're eating dinner, and I say, yeah, I'm going to share this political issue with my family here. They'll probably agree with my view, and I started sharing my view on this political issue. I saw one of my family members start to cringe as if to say, please don't go there. But I went there, and it was good for a while as I was talking, and there was silence. And then I had a family member go off on me. I mean, went completely off on me, questioned my religion, questioned my, oh man. I opened it up, and they went right through it. These Pharisees, with their thought, opened up, and Jesus went right through. And listen, Jesus went off. He let the Pharisees have it. He says, you clean the outside of the cup, but on the inside is greed and wickedness. He says, you should give, like giving to charities, giving alms, giving to the poor. You should give not to be seen, but as a reflection of the good that's going on in your inner life. He says, you give 10%, you tithe your assets, you support the temple, because that's what the tithes go to, and you give that, you give your 10%, because it's probably a matter of public record. People can see what you give there, but while you give tithes, you ignore issues of justice and the love of God. In other words, you give your money as if giving your money absolves you from weightier matters, like treating people with respect and taking care of the poor and taking care of widows. Church, Jesus went off. You Pharisees, you want the best seat, the prominent roles, and you want to be seen. And Jesus said, you're like unmarked graves, or in some translations, whitewashed graves. That's an interesting phrase. It refers to these graves that if they're not taken care of, the markers would wash off. And if you walked on those graves, you would be considered unclean. What Jesus is saying about these Pharisees is that you're unmarked graves, and people are interacting with you. And because they interact with you, Pharisees, they're now unclean. You're dirty. Jesus went off. And at this point, it's boiling in there. It's uncomfortable. And I remember, just as if that family member was going off on me, that there were probably others around that table who were uncomfortable as well. They're looking at Jesus as if to say, or the Pharisee as if to say, why are you thinking these things? Why are you bringing up this idea of washing? Why did you open up that can of worms? But there was another person there, a scribe, it says. They were called lawyers. They were experts in the law of God. And they began to chime in saying, well, Jesus, I know you're talking to the Pharisees here, but man, you're kind of insulting us as well. And then Jesus says, oh, you want some of this too? Okay, I'm going to give you some too. And this is what he says to the lawyers. You use the law to burden people, not to bring them closer to God. It's one thing to badger them with these laws and rules, but you don't do anything to help them to keep the very rules that you preach. Not only that, you don't keep these laws yourselves. Not only that, you don't follow these binding laws. You do nothing. You don't lift a finger, he says, to help. And you experts are just as guilty of those in the past who killed the prophets. You get out here and you preach these messages and you quote the prophets of old. But guess what? You agree with those who killed those prophets of old. And the reason why they killed the prophets of old is because the prophets were dropping these truth bombs. They didn't like it. And so they killed him. He says, you're doing the exact same. You want some of this too? Jesus gave it to the lawyers too. Woo! What a meal. That got heated fast. This was a bona fide tongue lashing, and it didn't sit well with the host or the other guests. And after dinner was over, they were outside of the house, and the lawyers and Pharisees, they were badgering Jesus with questions and retorts in order that they might get this, is right in the text, in order that they might catch him. It went from finding common ground to trying to find a way to catch him with something. Look, I'll be the first to admit that this is an uncomfortable meal scene. It's uncomfortable for me. Some have observed that Jesus threw mealtime etiquette out the window. Some have even quipped that Jesus was kind of rude to the hosts. In first century meals, you would never do something like this. And so when I hear things like that, I feel like I need to defend Jesus. I need to find a way out of here. I need to find a way to save Jesus' reputation. But Jesus doesn't need defending. You know who needs defending? Me. Because when I hear this tongue lashing, I start thinking about the way that I'm just like the Pharisees. And I'm just like the lawyers. I find it harder to defend that in 2024, if Jesus sat at a table with the church, he might be just as abrupt, just as terse, just as harsh. Jesus might be just as ready to point out that in the church we focus so much on what people see at the expense of self-analysis, self-examination, and soul-searching. While we spend energy making sure we look good on the outside to garner compliments and praise, we ignore the inside, that which fuels genuine and honest expressions of faith. I have given the invitation for us to dine with Jesus. I never said that the encounters with Jesus would be all fluff. I never said that there wouldn't be times that it would get a little difficult. Might be a little rough. See, looking at our hearts, looking at what fuels us and motivates us and doing some self-examination and some soul-searching, we might find some things that we don't like. We might find that we're attention-getters. We might find that we do things so that people may see and fool them, knowing that on the inside there is something dramatically different going on. I can dress up really good. I can put on a nice suit coat. I can put on some perfume. I can put on some smiles. I can pray a prayer out loud and make you think that I'm so holy and righteous and spiritual. But on the inside, there may be something really dark going on. And Jesus is saying, stop focusing on this outside stuff. And get to the stuff that's real. Get to the heart of it. Some people call that introspection. The heart. Not only do we focus on looking good, and we then do things that prevent others from life-changing encounters with God because we focus so much on the outside and making sure we get the rituals right. Oh, if you get the rituals right, then God approves. Meanwhile, inside, we're dealing with greed, jealousy, pride, and anger issues, and dishonesty, selfishness. It's easier for us to deal with people's stuff they're doing on the outside than to deal with our own mess on the inside. Outside appearances can be deceiving. The first king of Israel was Saul. He was tall, he was dark, he was handsome. But on the inside, he was dishonest He was always seeking approval. He just didn't do the right thing. So God rejected him. He wanted a new king. He called his prophet Samuel to go and find another king. And he goes to the house of a guy by the name of Jesse. And Jesse has all these tall, dark, and handsome sons. And Samuel's like, is it this person, God? And the Lord said, no. Is it this person? No, go out in the field. There's a boy out there who's tending sheep. And he looks at this boy and is like, that kid, he doesn't look right. And this is what God said. He says, that's the one that I have chosen. And I want you to know this, Samuel. Do not look on his appearance or the height or his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord does not see as mortals see. They look on the outward appearance. Read these next words with me. But the Lord looks on the what? On the what? The heart. The prophet Jeremiah said, the heart is devious above all else. It is perverse. Who can understand? I, the Lord, test the mind and search the heart. Oh, give to all according to their ways, according to the fruit of their doings. It's God searches the heart. Proverbs, the crucible is for silver and the furnace is for gold. But the Lord tests the what? The heart. When David committed a horrible sin, oh, it was so horrible. After he confessed and went to God, he prayed to God. He said to God, create in me a clean heart, O God, and put a new and right spirit within me. Church introspection, we need to look on the inside. On the outside, David, they look good. But on the inside, there was something going on. And so David doesn't first start with dealing with his outside actions. He starts with the heart. And so that's the bad news. The bad news is that on the inside, if we do some honest introspection, we're a mess. We're ruined. We're jacked up. That's the bad news. But the good news, that Jesus is inviting us to dine with him so he can perform heart surgery. That's the good news. The good news is that we don't have to settle with being ruined and jacked up. We don't have to settle with being overtaken by some of these inner sins like jealousy and selfishness and pride. We don't have to settle with that, because Jesus says, come dine with me. Come to my operating table and let me fix your heart. In the first sermon of this series, I invited us to invite Jesus to dine with us in the best of rooms. Taking this metaphor and language from a song by Randall Thompson, the best of rooms. The best of rooms is the heart. Invite Jesus to a heart place so that he can do the work to fix us up on the inside. If he fixes us up on the inside, we can be better for people on the outside. If he fixes up on the inside, we will be better for ourselves. We will be better for others. We'll be better for the church. We'll be better for the community. We'll be better for the world. But we've got to start on the inside. I'm all for making sure we get the rituals right. I'm all for making sure we sing the right songs, sing the right way, and do all of that. But listen, that's like that compared to dealing with the heart. And so, may we come broken to God. May we come knowing that God has the ability to operate on us like nothing can. May we invite Jesus to dine with us in the best of rooms. May we come just as we are, broken to be mended, empty to be filled, cleansed by the blood of the Lamb. But it starts with some introspection, a confession that we need Jesus. If you need Jesus today, as we're singing this next song, if you want to come forward and share your need with the church so that we can pray, we will do that. If you come broken right now, knowing that you need to give your life to Jesus, a profession of faith, baptism, we can do that. But more than all of that, right now, stop pretending. I know the outside looks good, but if on the inside there's some broken stuff there, cry out to God right now. Fix that heart so that we can be a better us, be better for ourselves, be better for others. Amen. Stand, let's sing.